Bonjour from the magnificent Grand Palais in Paris. I'm Tammy Haddad, and you're listening to our special coverage of the 2025 Paris AI Action Summit. Over the next few segments, we'll explore how innovators, entrepreneurs, policymakers, and advocates from around the globe are shaping the future of artificial intelligence and making it work for everyone. We've gathered some incredible voices here at the summit. You'll hear from Roxanne Zbarza, the director of Station F, Ina Fried, chief technology correspondent at Axios, Eli Sugarman from the Special Competitive Studies Project, the former French ambassador to the United States, Philippe Etienne, investor Andrew Segrou from Avenir, and finally, Common Sense Media CEO and founder Jim Steyer. So let's dive in and see what's happening on the ground right here at the world's premier AI gathering. First up, my conversation with Roxanne Zbarza and Ina Fried live from the bustling Grand Palais. We're here at the AI Action Summit, and it's so exciting to be with Roxanne because she runs Station F, which is one of the most incredible AI locations in the entire world because you've got, let's see, OpenAI, Amazon, Apple.
We have pretty much all the big names in AI that are working at Station F as partners. Microsoft and Meta run AI programs on campus. Hugging Face is a company that was built on site, so we have quite a lot going on.
Great. So how did you end up here in France at Station F?
Oh my gosh,
you're American.
A long story. Yes, I'm originally from the Bay Area. I came out about 15 years ago to study, and I fell in love with this ecosystem. I felt there was a ton to build, and I've just seen it transform since then.
And what do you hope France accomplishes with the AI Action Summit?
It's been a very promising start. We've already seen some great announcements in terms of investment.
$109 billion.
Yes, that's giving this ecosystem a lot of confidence and obviously a lot of resources to really accelerate. But what I actually hope is that AI lands with the greater public. I think today a lot of people are feeling like AI is a microcosm just for the tech elite. And I really hope that people grasp the potential that this has.
And look who's here right now, Ina Fried, the great Axios reporter. Ina Fried is here at the AI Action Summit. That doubles the action, Roxanne.
I know.
This is Roxanne from Station F. She runs the only location in the entire world, Station F, that has every single great tech company. And I asked her what they're trying to accomplish.
With this summit, one of my personal hopes is that we actually land AI with the greater public. I think today a lot of people are feeling like AI is a microcosm just for the tech elite, and I really hope that people actually grasp what potential this has and they stop being so fearful and worrying about their jobs and worrying about existential risks.
Definitely.
And Ina, so you're here. What are you seeing so far?
I'm looking forward to going to Station F tomorrow. But, you know, yesterday there were a lot of side events. A lot of the question is what's going to come out of here. And I think some of it will be whatever the official communiques and announcements are. But a lot of it is you just have a lot of the right people together talking. And so yesterday I was at Roman Chowdhury had this side event from Humane Intelligence, like looking at a lot of the issues of how AI is affecting things, both good and bad, but what we really need to take action on. So that was one great conversation. I got to sit down with Demis Hassabis and talk about what things look like from his perspective.
And what does he think should happen this week? Because almost every AI technologist also has a point of view on what they want to see happen.
So that's what I asked him, especially with this feeling that really powerful AI isn't that far off. Some people think it's a couple years, some people think a little bit longer, but it's coming. What should we do with what's really a very small amount of time? And he was really saying international cooperation.
What do you think, Roxanne?
I totally agree. And actually, that's one of the topics I'm going to be moderating this afternoon.
Huh?
So we're talking about sustainable AI and scaling it on a global level.
Well, let me ask the tough American question, if I may, which is, the extra regulation in the United States, in Europe, is any of that going to loosen up and help companies scale? We look at Mistral, we look at Helvi. I mean, there's a lot of companies in Europe, but they're not scaling like the U.S.
It's a very good question. Is it due to regulation? I'm not sure because it's just come into play now. So I'm not sure that we can actually say that's the reason. I do think also the European fragmentation is part of the issue, and maybe also the billions that were announced this morning will put a big acceleration on that.
So it's investment too.
It is definitely also investment.
Okay, where are you gonna party tonight? At the AWS party or Avenir, or where will we find you later?
I will be at Elysee tonight.
Oh, hey, congratulations.
Hope you have a maybe we'll be there too. Ina, come on.
My invite must have been lost in La Poste.
I think it blew off there. It was under your croissant. When you lifted it up, it went flying off the table.
In fairness, I am going to dinner at the foreign ministry across the street, so I'll wait.
Good, I will see you.
All right. Thank you both so much. Now let's turn to the nonprofit world and hear from someone who's helping new AI companies prioritize safety from the ground up. Here's my conversation with Eli Sugarman of the Special Competitive Studies Project on their launch of Roost. My favorite group in Washington, SCSP, is here. Eli Sugarman, big announcement about Roost. Tell us about it.
Wonderful. We're launching a really exciting new initiative called Roost for robust, open online safety tools. It's a nonprofit that's going to offer really exciting technology, leveraging open source, so AI companies, social media, gaming, all the online platforms can do safety better and really help small companies in particular do what we all want them to do to keep users safe and do it for free.
So how does it work? Does a startup come to you and say, hey, we would, you know, like some help?
Absolutely. It comes. We have a website and we're spreading the word and people come to us and say, listen, I really don't want child sexual abuse material and the grossest of the gross on our platform. And that's bad for society. It's bad for our users. We want technology. We want expertise. We want help putting that open source software to use to build our product, to innovate.
You know, in a year, open source has now become regular. I mean, there's no more fighting about it. It's here to stay.
Right.
And helping startups, as you know so well. So what's your biggest concern? And what are you hearing from? You have so many partners. What is their biggest concern?
Yeah, so I think we do have a lot of partners. And it's really exciting to have everybody from Google and OpenAI to Discord to Roblox to the McGovern Foundation to the Knight Foundation to Blue Sky to Common Crawl. And really that tent is important. I think their biggest concern is just no one has ever actually tried to leverage the power of open source in safety. They've seen it work in cybersecurity. Why has cybersecurity gotten better? A lot of the reason is enterprises all say, hey, there are these key building blocks of our technologies, these key things we rely on. Let's direct our engineers there and tell them to help improve that code that keeps helping everybody build and keep them safer and more secure. We're going to do the same thing.
So will you say, you work with one startup, what you learned from that one, are you going to take to the next one? How's it going to work?
Well said. So what we're going to do is use GitHub or an open repository and say the code is there. And as people use it and refine it, people can see new versions, new updates, new iterations as people learn and improve. And then they can immediately benefit that and keep improving it themselves. So the idea is you borrow from the collective and then you give back and everybody keeps learning and sort of it's joint development of technology. And then as we use it in different cases, like an AI company will use it differently than a social media company, they can learn from each other and see, oh, I didn't think about doing it that way, but they used it that way. I'm going to use that now and I'm going to innovate on top of it. So there's a lot of learning that way in a collaborative way.
So one of the pillars of the AI Action Summit is public AI.
Absolutely.
And it seems to me that what you're doing is actually helping that.
It is. We are actually a part of that pillar. We are a key outcome and a deliverable of that pillar of the summit and nested under the AI Foundation or Current AI that I think is launching today as well. And so very much so, we view this as public interest infrastructure. It benefits everybody and it benefits everybody with different perspectives and viewpoints. Part of the play here is it's about decentralization, it's about pluralism, and it's about transparency. We want to leverage open source to show that every community should choose for themselves what kind of safety they think is right, and not have a centralized system that nobody has insight into.
And the French were all for that.
The French are huge backers of this. They've been with us from day one. We are launching here at the summit to really show this is not just about the US. It is about a democratic vision for an online safe space, if you will, no pun intended. And the French government has been very supportive.
Okay, Eli, you don't really need my advice, but I would like to recommend at the AI Expo, June 1st in Washington, which we're all counting down to,
absolutely,
that maybe you should have Roost there and maybe
do
you should do some demos so that people can actually see how it actually works. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea. You may be reading my mind because that is exactly the plan.
Okay, great.
SCSP's Expo is a tent pole standing event, and we look forward to demoing what Roost has to offer there.
Okay, I'll see you there then.
Wonderful, I look forward to it.
Thank you, Eli Sugarman from SCSP.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Next, to a diplomatic perspective, I caught up with longtime ambassador Philippe Etienne, who offered an insider's view on France's leadership in convening this summit and driving global AI cooperation. We have an old friend right here. Yes, we do. Ambassador Etienne, who was in Washington for 4 or 5 years.
Four years.
Four incredible years.
Including my teaching at Columbia.
Well, that's New York, so you know I'm a D.C. girl. So let's talk about D.C. and what's happening in Paris today. You've got J.D. Vance coming here. You've got every single important AI person in the world. And we're here at the Palace.
Yes, in this place where we had also the Olympic Games. The Grand Palais that has been restored for the Olympic Games. It's a beautiful alliance between culture and the building of our future.
So the work that President Macron has done to bring the world leaders together, as well as tech leaders, this is a heavy lift.
Yes, and it's really important now when we have this global debate on artificial intelligence. This summit is inclusive. This summit is concrete. It's about action. This summit is also about shared objectives. A good example is that the organization, I'm not in the organization, but they have made a huge job. And one good example is that they have selected some projects from all over the world to show the use of AI for a better environment, for better skills, to fight against violence. So to show to the public that we have not to fear artificial intelligence. We have to set the right way of using it, of course, but it is an incredible opportunity. And it's also an incredible opportunity for our economies, for our competitiveness here in Europe. You know, there is this whole discussion about competitiveness on Europe in relation to the US, to China. And it's also very important for us to showcase what we can do also in Europe to participate to these advancements.
Well, it's interesting because China is here. And you know, since you've left Washington, there's been a real anti-China push on the national security side, among other things. But it is interesting that France brings China in today and really into almost every global conversation. Now, you're the ultimate diplomat. How hard is it to have something come out of this? I mean, that there's results, because this is action.
And exactly, but China is here, but not only China, the whole world.
Sure.
And the co-chair is France and India.
Right, how did that happen?
This is very important that Prime Minister Modi and the French President Emmanuel Macron are co-chairing this summit, because there will be this summit part tomorrow. And it's all about the global nature of every challenge, every opportunity also related to artificial intelligence. And China, of course, is part of this discussion. And China has to be included in this summit. It has been included by the previous summits also on AI. So we have this discussion here, and China will be represented at the high level, like the United States with the vice president. And we look to concretize the idea of an action summit. As you said, it has to be proved it is an action summit, not only in the name. And one of the ways to prove it is an action summit is to showcase the actions, the programs, including very positive objectives you can reach, the very objective, positive goals you can reach with AI. As I mentioned, in the very, very important fields of our activity, of our human activity, but also to explain why artificial intelligence can help us to bridge gaps, to skill people without destroying jobs, to increase our security and not to endangering our security. So this is the notion of AI for good, of action summit. And I think it is important to show this in concrete.
I think it's pretty gutsy to focus on those issues and to focus on public AI. In other words, basically that one of the pillars of the summit is it should be for everyone. And we want to make sure it's for everyone. And so you're really kind of pushing in the very diplomatic way that you do the rest of the world to say it's got to be for everyone or it's not going to work.
Exactly. This is a very important message. Inclusivity is a key word, our public interest. And you know, both inside our societies in the most developed countries, we have science, we have technology, but we have a lot of people who need access to this technology. And beyond our countries, around the world, it's in our interest, but it's also our duty to open access to AI to all those countries. And some of those projects I visited this morning, they come from Nigeria, they come from Mexico, they come from Ivory Coast. It's really enlightening and uplifting to see that everywhere, if we give capacities, not only computing capacities, but also open software, training possibilities, the potential is huge, but it must be open, it must be extended to everybody, as you said. It must not be concentrated in a small number of countries or of companies.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Etienne. It's so good to see you. All your friends in Washington, say hello. Come back and visit us. Now let's meet an investor who's fueling AI innovation on the ground. Here's my interview with Andrew Chagrou from Avenir. They're investors in AI. And by the way, through the most incredible AI iconic party at the Foreign Ministry. Okay, Andrew, I'm so glad to be here with you. We're at the Grand Palais. Have you been here before?
This is my first time.
Oh my goodness. So you're here with Avenir. Tell us about the company.
Sure. So it's a firm I started about 8 years ago. We're a technology investment firm with about $3 billion under management. We focus on early and growth stage tech investing.
Okay. What are you doing here in this beautiful palace? Are you making deals or what's happening?
Well, it's a really amazing time to bring together all of these thought leaders, academics, and practitioners. You know, young folks building companies leveraging AI. So it's a great time to get together with friends and new contacts as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you look around, we are surrounded by, what, like 3,000 people all listening to Fei-Fei Li and these incredible displays. And you guys are hosting the big party, right?
Yes, we're looking forward to it this evening.
Yes, at the Foreign Ministry. How'd you work that out?
Well, I understand it's the first time they've actually ever partnered with a for-profit organization to host an event. And the concept was, could we bring together a number of the founders who are on the front lines building these companies with the various members of government, et cetera, from around the world who are here for the event.
And what are you hearing from founders? Are they worried about capital? Are they worried about the technology? Are they worried about competition?
I think all of those are concerns. I think also understanding what the future regulatory environment will be, which is really critical for understanding their future business plan. So the ability for them to be part of the conversation and help influence. You know, the challenge with regulating a category that's moving as quickly as this is the technology is moving much faster than policymakers.
Right. So yesterday I was at Humane Intelligence. They had convened a group, and then later in the day, there was another group called Roost, and they are creating open source tools to allow startups, like maybe some that you're working with, to have the tools that they can red team on their own. They don't have to wait. They don't have to pay all that money for compute or wait for AWS to step in or something like that. Are your companies looking for that kind of support, or how are they testing their models?
Well, it's really interesting. You know, the benefit of this highly competitive environment that we now have between OpenAI, Anthropic, now with DeepSeek, Mistral here in France, is that AI technology is broadly available to everyone who wants to build on it with a simple API call. So what we've seen is our companies have been able to build at pretty quick pace and start deploying into end markets that are actually driving real ROI to customers. So I think that's the thing that maybe is potentially misunderstood at some of these conferences. So much of the focus is on the long future, you know, AGI, what will it look like when we have general intelligence that's a superhuman? And what's interesting is you look at the technologies that are available today, the state of AI today, it's already having a real impact across companies and markets. So I think about certain areas of healthcare as an example where we're invested. You're seeing not only a large increase in the standard of care that patients get by having the average doctor become a top doctor, right?
So
with access to these co-pilots.
So it's co-pilots. Yeah, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's been a really fascinating thing. As an example, we're invested in a dental AI business called Videa. And what they're able to do is through a dental scan or an x-ray, detect any dental issues at a very high rate. And so what you find is that there's many times where that issue is not diagnosed by a doctor, by a dentist in this case. This is basically allowing that standard of care to increase dramatically through the power of AI.
And how do dentists work with you? I mean, are they resentful? Are doctors resentful of this new technology? How do you incorporate them?
You know, I think the beautiful thing is I think you only go to become a doctor or a dentist because you want to help people. And so when I think they
are
have
you
so...
saying there's no egos there?
I'm sure there are. But I think in general, I think the reception has been quite positive in that it's helping them to diagnose a patient more accurate rates, helping those patients get help. And I think one of the most fascinating psychological impacts of this is actually what we're seeing in a lot of the data is that not only are the diagnosis rates higher, but the case completion rates are higher, which means that for some reason, patients are seeing this data or this recommendation from a technology tool like AI and saying, well, maybe I actually do need to get that work done, right? And so to have that case, to have that cavity repaired in the smallest of instances or to have much more dramatic procedures done. So I think that's the interesting dynamic is that there seems to be an added layer of trust that's come.
Which is interesting, right? Because when AI started out, people were kind of afraid, you know, it's something hallucinating. And now it's basically automation bias, right? If the AI tells you, you believe it, which is an interesting turn in only, what would you say, like a year?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think it really helps that this, in all of these situations, we're talking about human in the loop, right? Like that
right.
that care could not be provided without the very valuable doctors, dentists, nurses who are providing it, but this just makes them super doctors.
So what is the most exciting piece of AI you're working on? If I don't want you to badmouth any of your clients, but is there anything else? That dental company sounds really interesting. Any other company you want to highlight or tell us about?
Yeah, I think for me, obviously, the financial returns are interesting for all of these companies.
Are you getting financial returns yet?
These companies are growing very quickly. I'd say that's probably one of the more interesting things is that the pace of adoption of these technologies into these end markets is steeper than any slope I have seen in my career as an investor. I'd say another one that's a really fascinating one, just if you want to talk about the human impact side for a moment, is in the elder care space. You know, that's a really challenging segment of the population for us. Obviously, we have in the United States and around the world a rapidly aging population, and the ability to provide far greater care through computer vision and AI is really impactful. And so what we're seeing is decreases in fall rates, increases in the amount of time that one can stay in one of these homes versus having to go into a hospital setting. So all of those things, I think, are really interesting applications of how smart entrepreneurs have taken a general technology like what we have today with the AI that you can get from an LLM like ChatGPT or like Anthropic's Claude model, and tailoring it to a very specific vertical, a very specific use case, and creating a much better experience.
That's incredible. So the company is Avenir. I'm so excited to meet you here. We'll always have the Grand Palais.
Yes.
That's where we met this week.
Yes, exactly. Look forward to seeing you tonight, hopefully.
Absolutely. I'll be there dancing on the, you know, you got to dance when you're at the
Absolutely.
Foreign ministry, right?
Exactly.
We're the first in.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've just heard how private investment is accelerating AI breakthroughs in healthcare and beyond. But what about the impact on children, families, and education? For that, we turn to Jim Steyer, founder and CEO of Common Sense Media, who's at the forefront of advocating for kids in the AI era. I'm here at the AI Action Summit, and it's so appropriate that I'm with Jim Steyer because he's a man of action. What you've created with Common Sense Media has been remarkable, not just in the United States, but around the world. And tell me what you think is happening here today, and how is it working for your goals at Common Sense Media?
Well, clearly this is the big international summit on AI for 2025. President Macron has decided that France wants to play a big role in Europe and I think globally on AI issues. And he certainly has gathered a lot of the great leaders from around the world, including most of the people from the United States who run the big companies, et cetera. We have an office here in Paris and we have brought our digital literacy and AI literacy curriculum to France and most of the European countries.
What does that mean?
We have a curriculum that is basically driver's ed for the internet and cell phones and now AI. There are over 20 million students in the United States who use the curriculum every year, probably 50 million students around the world. It's basically about the safe, ethical, responsible use of technology, cell phones, the internet, and now AI. And as we've become a more global organization, the educational programs like that have to be done country by country. So for example, if you want to do big legislation in Europe, Brussels, the home of the EU, is really the most important place. And in fact, they passed the AI plan for Europe last year, which is quite frankly more sophisticated regulation than we have in the United States. So I think that this summit is folks who represent industry, politics, big NGOs like Common Sense Media, the United Nations, and it's just sort of a gathering place for people who care a lot about AI. What comes out of it remains to be seen. But it's interesting, they had an AI safety summit the last 2 years, and now President Macron changed the name to Action Summit, possibly because he's at 20% in the polls in France and is looking for a lift.
Yes, but you're also looking for a lift for protection of children.
Definitely.
Around the world. And it's interesting that one of the pillars of this summit is actually public AI.
Correct.
To make it more available. Are you guys focused on that?
We are, because truthfully, any technology with a potential impact like AI has should be available to everybody. Access, accessibility is a huge issue. It shouldn't just be for wealthy countries or for wealthy people. And that is actually a very important issue. And you actually see people from a lot of the African countries here, a lot of Latin American countries. So I actually think that's a very healthy thing.
You know most of the leaders of these AI companies. For example, Dario from Anthropic was at your event. Tell us about him and his support.
Well, I think Dario Amodei is not just a really, really respected scientist, engineer, and leader, but I actually think he really cares a lot about the issues. And yes, we have to deal with the CEOs of all the big tech companies, because Common Sense Media is the big advocacy group and nonprofit in the U.S. and elsewhere that focuses on the impact of technology, including AI, on kids and teens and families and education. I think, by the way, if you think about the long-term future of any big platform like AI, much of the responsibility and the future, fortunately or unfortunately, lies in the hands of a very small number of largely men who run the big companies. You can already see in AI that the big players, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, are already trying to dominate the space. You know, Dario and Anthropic, that's a new company, along with OpenAI, although OpenAI obviously has major investments from Microsoft, and Dario and Anthropic got big investments from Amazon. But you're already seeing at the top, on the big platforms, you're seeing a consolidation already, where the entrenched companies are trying to retain their entrenched power. And so we're in the business of, number one, trying to protect the best interests of kids and families, and quite frankly, also trying to regulate them against some of the excesses and downside. And if you look, say, at this field of social media, where we've been the largest nonprofit and advocate for kids and teens and families for 15 or more years, you see that the U.S. government, and quite frankly around the world, blew that. They just did not put in place safeguards for young people. And now all parents know and all educators know we're reaping the consequences of that with the impact on the social, emotional, and cognitive development of young people, with the issues around the arms race for attention, which affects all of us, but particularly young people, with the mental health crisis that you see in the United States and around the world. So it's critical that we get in early stage in AI and put safeguards and common sense regulation in place. And that's why we came to Paris. I'm speaking at the summit, but quite frankly, Europe has been ahead of the United States in putting in place safeguards and regulation, including privacy issues, et cetera, which is one of the reasons why the tech companies don't always love it. And it's also why they have been very successful in Washington, D.C. in preventing regulation. I mean, the last serious regulation of the tech industry was in the late 1990s when Mark Zuckerberg was in diapers. And so that's one of the big challenges, I think, as we look at the future of AI, is how are we going to put in place common sense regulation that protects all of us? And as usual, I think a lot of that will actually happen in California. which is where
Your bill got shot down, Governor Newsom.
We had a couple of bills last year that... They did, but they are going to go through the legislature again this year, and I'm more optimistic that our friend Gavin Newsom will sign them in 2025.
But, why?
Well, because the political dynamics have changed, and oftentimes... when you try to pass major legislation, number one, it's always a compromise. So it's sausage making. You always have to bargain. When we wrote the California privacy law in 2017, which is essentially the law of the land for the United States, we had to bargain away the private right of action in order to get the companies, a couple of the companies, Microsoft and Apple in particular, to support it. But I think you're going to see the same happen in AI. I do think California will pass major AI legislation this year, particularly as it pertains to kids in education. And I think this year that Governor Newsom will sign it. And if he doesn't, I'll hit him over the head with a 2x4. And I'll remind his 4 children and his wife that he wasn't protecting them. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see how that works. Well, it's interesting because you do know Governor Newsom well. You know every single CEO of these tech companies. Some have been your students. Maybe you'd like to tell us who got the best grades, if you can remember.
I don't actually... in my big lecture class, I don't do the grading the TAs do. But I will say this, Dario's really smart. Sam Altman's really smart too, by the way. I think he has a different take on the world than Dario does. Of course, Dario was the chief scientist or engineer at OpenAI before he started Anthropic. But yes, it's really interesting to watch. You know, my former student started Instagram and a number of other tech companies.
Well, but they're also, I mean, in many ways, you're in opposition. I mean, not... technically, but you could argue that, you know, OpenAI is not, you know, doing what you would like to be done.
Actually, Tammy, we are working with all of the companies now. So we operate on multiple levels. One, if we feel a company is led by folks who care about the broader well-being of kids and families and democracy, we'll work with a company even while we try to regulate them and they don't always like the regulation. And as you know, Chris Lehane is the head of global policy and communications at OpenAI. He has been a friend and colleague of mine for more than 20 years.
Right, all the way back to Gore. We just saw him in Washington.
He was the master of disaster with Mark Fabiani and Clintons. But the truth is, we are actually working with OpenAI to do a really significant professional development for educators in the United States and globally. So it's interesting. They don't like it when we run legislation, and sometimes frequently they try to defeat the legislation, but that's okay. We've come to a point now with the scale that we have, nearly 200 million users. You know, we can disagree. We can disagree vehemently around a particular piece of legislation, but we can also work with you to try to educate young people and parents and teachers about the potential benefits of AI, because I actually think AI... used wisely and appropriately, can have a huge positive impact on education. I'd say the two areas for the average person, the average citizen, where AI, if it's used well, can be transformational are education and healthcare.
And what about the Trump administration? Have you had any conversations with them?
We have had no conversations with them. I don't even know who's in charge.
Well, they're really just moving in to a certain extent.
Yes. And I...
well, J.D. Vance is going to be here, though.
Well, J.D. Vance is going to be here, who I know from his days when he was working closely with Steve Case, and they did The Rise of the Rest.
Rise of the Rest. Were you on that bus tour?
I sat in on that bus tour a couple of times. I will say this. I am not optimistic that the new administration is going to do anything meaningful for the benefit of children and families. That said, Common Sense Media is extremely popular in very conservative areas of the United States. We're a nonpartisan organization. We work with whoever wants to work with us. And I would be pleasantly surprised to see if the White House was interested. Bruce Reed, who oversaw all AI policy and tech policy and, quite frankly, all domestic policy under the Biden administration, has come back to work at Common Sense Media. His title is head of AI. He's been here in Paris and meeting with government leaders and business leaders. And so I think that we'll definitely be working in Washington and with you, Tammy.
Washington AI Network.
Washington AI
together.
Network.
And I do think it's an educational process for people. People are shocked by the actual technology. They're even the way you talk about it, right? So it's going to be baby steps for people to actually focus on kids that it's not their, you know, mandate.
But we feel you have to get in now. The big thing we learned this in social media. I think we understand this now because of the scale of our organization. You really have to get in at the beginning. So over 2 years ago, even though I don't do the real work, I decided we would rate all the AI platforms, and now we're rating the GPTs, if you will, on top of ChatGPT. We're rating basically the app stores that the big platforms like Gemini or ChatGPT are building. They're building applications on top of the core LLMs, right? But we're also doing AI literacy in all the schools in the United States and increasingly globally. We're doing a lot of research around that. And we're also writing the big regulations and legislation.
Well, you're in all the different areas. You know, yesterday, Roost was announced, and it's a group's special competitive studies project, Discord, Blue Sky, tons of organizations come together to help red teaming and evaluating AI startups that are built on open source. So that may be a way in.
When you have a new organization, you got to see, does it really have legs, quite frankly? You got to see how well it'll turn out. But look, we're in the business of working with whoever cares about the public interest and kids and families. We sort of, common sense, have a pretty unique role. And so we're really excited when we see new things start. But then it's not, you got to then deliver on stuff. But it's very interesting to see the newer, it's just such a new technology field. No, it isn't really, but the public, for the public, it is.
I wonder if it's changed at all that the local newspapers, where Common Sense Media is in a lot of local papers, where parents would see the reviews of movies, etc. But with the decline of local newspaper, has that hurt your impact?
That doesn't really affect us. I'll tell you why. The average, I mean, again, we have well over 150 million users. Hopefully we'll hit 200 million this year. People find us on the app. We have an app that's really popular. Quite frankly, they find us on technology platform. So even though, for example, the Washington Post carries our movie and TV reviews, the truth is the average person finds it on the Common Sense app or on the web. And then,
so you're saying I'm an old person because I was looking at, you know, we're old people.
Tammy, on that one, you and I are both old. You know, I started this when my kids were almost, you know, almost infants. Now, they always hated Common Sense Media, of course, because that was their dad, dad's thing. But no, it's a very different world now. And quite frankly, young people are the key. And I will tell you that you really have to listen to young people. And I think that's key to the future of AI, too, is that we're going to have the event we did yesterday here in Paris, which was the big event around kids and education and AI related to the Action Summit. We started out with youth voices. We had youth voices throughout it because the kids know more than we do about technology. I know, Tammy, I know you as a mom. I know.
Yeah, our kids know everything.
They're smarter.
Yeah.
And they're actually much more technologically proficient. Certainly my kids are way more technologically proficient than I am. And so I think as we build the right kind of protections for young people, we're going to have to involve them. The only other point I would make, by the way, about this is when you're here in Europe, they talk a ton about child sexual abuse material, CSAM, and the concern about pornography on the internet and child pornography because of the ability to manufacture images with AI. That is an important issue, but that's not the central issue when you're talking about the impact of AI or social media or technology on young people, because it's a far bigger issue. It's about the social, emotional, cognitive development of young people. And so while we have spearheaded important legislation in the U.S. and globally around child sexual abuse material, you shouldn't just think that's the only ball game. That's the issue where the companies are always willing to play ball because obviously they don't want to be associated.
The rest of it is harder.
Much harder, and it's against their economic self-interest. And even though a number of them need to clean up their platforms and don't like it when they're called out for the fact that they have that kind of content on their platforms, the bigger impact is on the mental health and social and emotional development of young people, and quite frankly, their learning as well.
Jim, I can't thank you enough for being here and the work you do. And you're such a hard worker and you bring it to everyone, even here in Paris. I'm a great admirer of yours and the work at Common Sense.
Thank you, Tammy. And let me tell you, we're really excited about the Washington AI Network. And since we have a big office there in D.C., led by some really talented people like Bruce and Danny Weiss, we look forward to working with you on this for the years to come.
Right. Well, we look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
That wraps up our conversation at the 2025 Paris AI Action Summit. We will see you in India. A special thank you to our guests and to the French government for inviting us in. Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.